good iodine. This shields the thyroid and prevents it from absorbing the harmful radioactive iodine. Potassium iodate is better than the iodide form because it is not as likely to cause upset stomachs in children, the elderly, the sick, and pets. Order the official potassium iodate for only $24 and save $5 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. Call now and get free shipping. That's 888-803-4438.
This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you of the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and then, of course, the views of our guest. And for this next hour, you're going to be hearing the views of Michael Perutka, who 4 years ago was the Constitution candidate for the presidency of the United States. And, well, he's kept right on in the battle. Of course, we know him best by the fact that he is the director or president or whatever it is. He's the man behind the Institute of the Constitution. And, of course, Pastor David Whitney, who we have on very, very frequently as we talk about the foundation of our freedom, because there's no way we can maintain our freedom unless people understand the Constitution. And the difficulty is they don't teach it in school. They don't teach it in law schools. Most of our politicians have never read the Constitution, even though they swear to uphold it and protect it from enemies, both foreign and domestic. So if we have any hope of maintaining our freedom, we need to re-educate the people on what was once known by every American citizen, and that is the miracle of this wonderful document we call the Constitution of the United States. Michael Perutka, thanks so much for being with us.
Dr. Stan, what a pleasure and an honor to be with you. Thank you so much for your hospitality and that of your staff and having me on. I'm grateful to be with you, and I miss you because we've had a couple of months here. I know I'm scheduled to be on with you usually once a month, and the last couple of months I've either been in Canada or the Czech Republic and been in travel status one way or another, and it's been impossible for me to be with you. So I'm so glad to hear your voice again and to talk to you. Thanks for your hospitality.
Well, I'm glad to have you with us, and I want to get your take on what's happening politically in the United States. Certainly we have two candidates, at least of the major parties. One is Barack Obama, Barack Hussein Obama, and the other, of course, is John McCain. And then, of course, we've got a couple of minor party candidates. Actually, we have Ralph Nader, we have Bob Barr, and we have Chuck Baldwin. And I want to know what you think about the major party candidates, what you think about the minor party candidates, and what the American people should be doing at this time about the situation in our country and the upcoming elections.
Well, thank you. Thank you for asking. Those are big, large, grand, wide questions.
Right.
let me try to eat out of it like one bite at a time here, Dr. Stan. First of all, with respect to the major candidates, the easiest part of your question, having to do with the major candidates, the Barack Obama and John McCain, I think that anybody who cares about the future of America, cares about restoring the republic, cares about their children, cares about the future, cares about what's moral and good, will just dismiss those two out of hand. Right from the get-go, right from the start, you can assure yourself, or I can assure you, that neither of those two major party candidates represent an American view of law or liberty or government at all. Neither of them are Americans. Neither of them have any allegiance to America. Neither of them have espoused in any of the things that they've said any indication that they have any qualification for the job of President of the United States. Now, I'm sure, to some of your listeners, like, what's he talking about? That's just such a broad statement. But and I'm sure to some of your listeners, they know exactly what I'm talking about, which goes to the heart of the matter is that there is a way to, there is an American view of law and government, and it's laid forth pretty precisely and concisely in our Declaration of Independence, and it can be summarized basically in these 3 points.
Oh, there is a God. We're going to have to hold those off because sure. We're going to go to a break here, and when we get back, we'll be talking with Michael Perutka of the Institute on the Constitution. Well, Michael, go right ahead.
Dr. Stan, every time I'm ready to give my big sentence, you go to a break. You have so many stations you're bringing in and out. God bless you for your work, and thank you for your witness and what you do.
Well, for our listeners out there, because now, of course, we have new listeners who did not hear the initial introduction, but, of course, our guest this afternoon is Michael Perutka of the Institute of the Constitution, and certainly he helps Radio Liberty here, and we have Pastor David Whitney, who works with Michael on regularly talking about the Constitution, and I just asked Michael what he thought about the two major party tickets, in other words, the two major party candidates, Barack Hussein Obama. Isn't it interesting? They never used the Hussein in his name, but that's his name. And then John McCain. Those are the two major party tickets. And then we have three minor party tickets. We have Ralph Nader running on the Green Party. We have Bob Barr running on the Libertarian Party. And we have Pastor Chuck Baldwin running on the Constitution Party. And, of course, Michael was basically saying that, that he discounted both of the major party candidates. So we were going to make 3 points before I so rudely interrupted you.
No, it wasn't rude at all, Dr. Stan. I'm kidding with you. And, again, I'm grateful for the opportunity to be on your program. Thank you so much for inviting me. I was saying that right out of the gate, you can take the two major party candidates, Barack Obama and John McCain, and you can wipe them off your list as any serious candidate. I'm not saying neither of them won't win. I'm just saying neither of them are serious candidates in the sense that neither of them are qualified for the job because they don't espouse either in their principles, their philosophy, or in the issues that they talk about any qualification or any understanding of what their job is. As a matter of fact, in the things that they talk about, protecting the environment, shoring up Social Security, making sure there's health care for every American, blather about global warming talk about education, and all those things that they talk about, Dr. Stan, they are assuring you even before they take their oath of office that they're going to violate it. Because all of those things that they're promising or talking about are absolutely violative of the United States Constitution, which, of course, if they win the election, they will take an oath to protect and defend. And the reason they will do that is that for some time now in America, and as I said, some of your guests know exactly what I'm talking about, for some years in America now, no serious major candidate has any fig of a notion.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Okay, but this is Dr. Stan, and Michael was just saying that for many, many years, none of our candidates have had any, and I think he's going to say, real allegiance or understanding or dedication to the Constitution. But you pick up the story, and don't let me preempt what you were going to say. Go ahead.
Well, you've said it. They've told you by their rhetoric and by the principles that they stand for or that they don't stand for or by their choice of issues that they don't understand American law and government at all. They have no idea of this constitutional scheme of American government, that we are government, that the central government, that is to say the federal government, is a government of limited and enumerated powers. The Constitution's power scheme is such that if it's not granted, if the authority or power is not granted to the Congress to the Congress or the executive or the courts, if it's not granted, then it's not there. And none of these major party candidates have any inkling of that. And interestingly, Dr. Stan, they're not called on that by anybody in the media. They're not challenged to adhere to constitutional standards or principles by anyone in the media, which really should be a kind of electrifying jolt to the American people to realize that those who they think are a watchdog on the government are in fact a lapdog, and that we shouldn't depend on anybody like a Tim Russert, who I know passed away today, or a Dan Blather, or any of those guys. No, we should never depend on them to do our job for us, to give us critical analysis or critical thinking of what major party candidates are saying. Now, interestingly, you asked me about other candidates. Ralph Nader, I debated against and met during my campaign in 2004. And, well, it's interesting, Dr. Stan. I found him to be a very engaging and nice man. He was generous and kind and decent to me. Of course, I don't agree with very much that he says or stands for. His approach and his beginning in looking for the source of authority in law and government is the self. He takes a libertarian approach where sovereignty comes from the individual. And of course, in the Constitution Party that Chuck Baldwin stands for and represents, and that I represented, we begin with the idea that God is sovereign and His law is supreme, and any human law that doesn't comport with God's law is not valid or enforceable. So, Dr. Baldwin was my vice presidential candidate and ran with me very nobly and honorably in 2004. And I appreciate his efforts, although I'm disappointed in the Constitution Party itself, which has compromised on the life issue to some extent, and I have a degree of reservation about that, I have to admit. But Dr. Baldwin personally, I have the greatest admiration for, and I believe that he is qualified and capable of being President of the United States. I don't know who else is running.
Bob Barr.
Bob Barr is a libertarian candidate, I guess, although he also is a man that I know and admire personally, and has been, and when I ran in 2004 was kind enough to have me on his radio program and gave me a great deal of help. I don't agree with his starting point either, and I don't think it's consistent with our founding father of the American scheme of law and government, again, which I started to say earlier. It really can be summarized in three basic things, and this is contained in our Declaration of Independence. As you all know, there is a God, our rights come from Him, and the purpose of government is to protect and defend those God-given rights. I mean, those three things right there. There is a God, our rights come from Him, the purpose of government is to protect and defend those God-given rights. That's the foundation of the American view.
And in fact, it's really so interesting that they just don't teach that in school anymore. In fact, in many of the textbooks, they leave out part of the second paragraph, which says, you know, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men were created equal and were endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. And governments are constituted among men to secure these rights, with the consent of the people. That's what it's all about, and you summarize that so well.
And that's what we call the American view, and of course, what you just quoted were the words of the Declaration itself. And you're right; they don't teach it anymore. And the fact that they don't teach it anymore means would indicate to you, I think, Dr. Stan, that a revolution has taken place in America. It's taken place. The fact that our schools would avoid teaching that and actually teach something different means that the revolution isn't happening. It's happened. It's occurred. Our children are being taught to be something other than Americans. And that's traitorous, treasonous, and horrible. If we saw it happen all at once before our eyes, we'd say that's a warlike action against the United States, but we've done it. It's happened internally. We've done it to ourselves. The revolution has taken place, and our own government schools and our media are used as the vehicles to perpetrate this traitorous, treacherous, a treasonous agenda.
And that's
where we live in America today.
I think it's so important that people understand that the enemy is not hiding in a cave over in Pakistan with a long beard, and a laptop and a dialysis machine. He's not the enemy. And it's said that the enemy is not over in Moscow and Putin, and I don't like those people, but they're not the enemy. The enemy are here in the United States. And what people have to understand is they wear ties, and they have white shirts, and they have nice suits, and they're very cultured. And they work through the great tax-exempt foundations, Ford, Rockefeller, and Carnegie. They work through the Council on Foreign Relations. They work through the Bilderbergers. They work through our central banking system. They have their people planted at every level of our government. And they have literally taken over our country. These people have an intense hatred of freedom. They're globalists. They're loyalty to this idea of a one-world government, of one-world religion, and of course the installment of a one-world leader with a ruling oligarchy. And the average American doesn't understand. They're using the military and financial power of the United States to impose this not only on our country but on the entire world. And the average individual, as long as times are good and we're making lots of money and we have television and we can watch pornography if we want to, boy, we have all sorts of freedom to do all the wrong things, because the most important thing for our nation today and for generations unborn is to preserve the freedom and pass on to them the freedom that we inherited from generations before. So, Michael, how are we going to get people to understand that, as you say, the revolution has already taken place, they control this country, we need to take America back, don't we?
Well, we do, but we absolutely do. And many people have an understanding and a realization of that, but I think there are a few people that actually have a vision of how that must happen. How that must happen, really, although it will result in a political solution is not the beginning of it, because Rush Dooney actually said, you could take the Constitution and actually impose it in hell, and it wouldn't change anything. It wouldn't change one thing in hell, because in order for the Constitution to be operative in a culture, the principles and the morality of it need to be ingrained in the people. And that's what we don't have in America today, Dr. Stan. What we don't have in America today is that moral and religious people that John Adams talked about when he said this Constitution is intended for a moral and religious people, and it's wholly inadequate for the governance of any other. And that's so true. We don't have a moral and religious people in the sense that John Adams meant it, or in the sense that he meant it when he made that statement. We are a people that has lost our morality, and I guess you could still say, kind of tongue in cheek, that we are a religious people, but the religion that we follow is not the religion that John Adams was talking about. We are very humanistic people in America today. So the answer I'm suggesting is that yes, we need a political solution. Yes, we need all that, but none of those will be operative or will work without the change in the hearts and minds of the people. We need a moral transformation in America. We need national repentance, and it needs to be effectuated, I believe, in if you look at God's jurisdictions that He's ordained, it needs to be effectuated by the church. The church has got to stop being the lapdog of the civil government and needs to take its separate, individual, God-ordained role, and preachers have to preach the word of God so that people will understand that there is a proper understanding of the concept of separation of church and state, not the false one that's in play today. And I hope, if we can, to use the rest of this program to talk a little bit about the separate, distinct jurisdictions that God has ordained and their roles. I recently gave a talk, Dr. Stan, in Institute on the Constitution at our recent First Friday meeting. It was our May First Friday meeting, and we called it Up Against the Wall, and I used the different walls of the room, to the four walls of the room, to talk about the four jurisdictions that God has ordained. And we actually did kind of a class exercise and talked about different functions and which wall they belong on. And if I could just kind of step through that with your audience today and then maybe field any questions that they might have about it, that would, I think, be a good way to use this program.
Hold that thought, Michael. We'll be back in just a moment here.
Okay.
Well, Michael, you go right ahead.
Well, Dr. Stan, I was saying that God has ordained four different governments, earthly, temporal governments. And we frequently, when we talk about the government, we're only talking about the civil government. We're only talking about one wall, if you will. And I asked people in this demonstration that I did, and by the way, it's available if you go to iotconline.com, and you can get a copy of this presentation that I was privileged to make back in May of this year. And as I said, we called it Up Against the Wall, and we used the four walls of the room to demonstrate the four jurisdictions that God has ordained, the four governments that He's ordained. If you just picture yourself standing in a room and think of the wall that's behind you, behind where you're standing, as self-government, and you just think of the word self being on that wall, and God has ordained self-government. We are responsible for our own actions, and we'll be held accountable for our own actions before God. As a matter of fact, the Ten Commandments actually speak to our self-government. They are guideposts and commandments about what we as individuals are accountable both before God and with respect to our fellow man. That's what the Ten Commandments talk about. So one clear government that God has ordained is self-government. We are responsible, and we'll be held accountable for our own government. Self-control is another way to say it. Another way to kind of look at what John Adams said about the Constitution is, he said the Constitution is intended for a moral and religious people. He presupposed, and an American government presupposes, that we have a people who are capable of self-government, and that would be a people who hold to a higher moral standard. That's what John Adams meant by a moral and religious people. Well, now, if you look at the left wall, from where you're standing in this imaginary room that you're in, on the left wall, you might think of that wall as representing the family government. And that wall, like all the other walls, has a top and a sides and a bottom. It has boundaries. There are certain things that are within the jurisdiction of the family and certain things that are not. One thing I'm going to suggest right at this point is that the education of children is on that wall. It's on the family wall. It's not given over to the civil government. Raising children in the fear and admonition of the Lord is something that God gave the authority to do to moms and dads, to families. And there are other things we'll get to and talk about that are on the family wall. Now, if you look straight ahead of you on the back wall of the room, you can put the word church. There's church government. God ordained church government, and the church has various duties and responsibilities, one of which, by the way, and I'll come back to this in a minute, Lord Acton said, is the perpetual responsibility to keep the fourth branch of government on its own wall and make sure it doesn't get off the wall. And that's the civil government. If you look to the right of where you're standing, there's you can write the word civil on that wall. And the civil government is what you and I, Dr. Stan, would call the state. The state has certain powers, and it also has certain limits. Now, given that analogy of the four walls, let me just say a couple of things. Number one, any time, any jurisdiction violate...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. And with us, of course, is Michael Perutka. And he basically is talking about the four governments that God has ordained. The first is a self-government. We've got to be able to govern ourselves if we want to be free. For as John Adams had said, our Constitution was made for a moral and religious people who could not do for any other. And the second type of government would be, of course, the family government, and the third would be the church government, and then the fourth would be the civil government, but all of the other three types of government would be used to try to curtail the power of the civil government, because the great controversy, the great problem of throughout all time has been the battle between the civil government that wants to control the people and the individual who wants to be free. So you pick up the story there, Michael, and elaborate on all of those points for the people who didn't hear it before.
Well, thank you. If you imagine yourself standing in this room, behind you, as you said, being the wall of self-government, to the left being family government, ahead of you being church government, and to the right of you being the civil government, these are the four governments that God has ordained. And each of them have boundaries. Think of the top corner and the walls, the corners of the room and the floor. Think of these, that any time one jurisdiction violates or usurps the jurisdiction of another, you're going to have problems. You're going to have major problems. And let me just pause for a second to give a brief example of that. Let's say, Dr. Stan, you and I live next door to each other. Okay? Let's say I have the privilege of living in the great place in Monterey, like in that beautiful area, which I've had the privilege to visit, by the way. Let's say we live next door to each other, and I come out on my back porch, and I can see down over the fence into your backyard, right? And I look down into Dr. Stan's backyard, and I can see that Dr. Stan has let his grass grow too long, and he habitually does that. He just doesn't cut his grass, and I can see from his flower beds that he doesn't know what I know about keeping flower beds correctly done, and he doesn't have the capacity to mulch like I know how to do that. And let's say I just am better. Let's just posit this, because it's not true, Dr. Stan, but let's just posit that I'm better at this than you are. And I can see that you're letting it go. So I jump over the fence, and I start mulching your flower beds and rearranging your flowers and tearing down some things and planting some other things and make myself at home doing that. What you and I would agree, and I think everybody listening to us would agree, is that what I've just done is become a trespasser. I've just broken the law because I've done, even though I'm better than you are, I'm better than you at that, it doesn't matter because I have no authority to be in that jurisdiction. Now, if you go back to our example of the walls in the room, anytime any branch of government, any government on any wall usurps the jurisdiction of another wall, we're going to have problems. It's sinful, it's wrong, and it's going to have disastrous consequences. For example, I mentioned earlier that the raising of children in the fear and admonition of the Lord, the education of children, is on the family wall. It's on the family wall. If the civil government undertakes to do that, it just won't work. Of course, the civil government, for a number of reasons, so there's the civil government, will seek to train children up to have an allegiance to itself, not to the values and principles of the family. By the way, if you read the works of, in this example, I don't mean to get too far down this road, but if you read the works of Robert Owen and his son Robert Dale Owen and Horace Mann and others who began the government schools, this is precisely what they said they were doing. As a matter of fact, if you read their writings, don't take my word for it, but read Albert Kolmba and Horace Mann and Robert Owen and later on John Dewey. This is precisely what they said they were going to do to try to de-Christianize America by moving the children away, by training the children away from the values of their parents. Precisely what they said. As a matter of fact, they wrote that they were ecstatic that they were doing it faster and better than they thought they could do it. So that's any time one wall violates the jurisdiction of another wall, you have problems. And you also have to watch out for the fact that one wall might cede or just give over its authority to another wall. That's the same disastrous consequences occur. It's outside God's order. It's outside God's plan. It won't have God's blessing, and there'll be disastrous consequences. So we need if we're going to do this right in America, we need to understand these laws. Now, the last little piece of the picture that I want to add in here is that, let's look to the ceiling of the room a minute. Look up over your head. We've got these four walls in their jurisdictions, and we know that they're all limited. Up above, on the ceiling, and I guess really on the sky and through the whole universe and down through the walls, is the jurisdiction of God. God has ordained these walls and given them their boundaries, and He is sovereign over them all. This is quintessentially the understanding of our founders, and this is part and parcel of the American view of law and government.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Michael Perutka. And, of course, I think Michael's absolutely right. So the overall of the various four walls is God. And, of course, the only way you can have an organized society is to have fear of God, to have love of God. In fact, we're told in the Scriptures we're to love God with all of our hearts and all of our souls and all of our might. And, of course, that is the greatest of all the commandments. And then to love our neighbors ourselves. These are the very foundations of life, of the Bible itself. So go right ahead.
Sure. Thanks, Dr. Stan. And I appreciate you staying with me through this word picture of the room and the walls and the ceiling, etc. But let me make this point at this juncture. If you consider what we've said here about the walls and the ceiling and God's jurisdiction being down and through all the walls, then you can understand now, if you have that picture in your mind, that there is a proper understanding of the separation of church and state. And that is, again, think of it this way, church and state are on different walls. They have different limitations. They have different jurisdictions. They're responsible for different things. But they're both under the ceiling, aren't they? They're both under God's authority. So when you hear this false understanding that's been perversely perpetrated in America today, this false understanding of separation of church and state, what they're trying to tell you is that wall to your right can't ever take into consideration the things that God says. Now, remember, God's not on that other wall. God's on the ceiling and down through all the walls. Of course it must take into account the things that God says. As a matter of fact, everything it does must be subject to His authority, or it will not be blessed, and it will be sinful and perverse, unless it acknowledges and represents that God is on the ceiling, that it is subject to God's authority. So the civil government not only is not prevented from acknowledging God, it must acknowledge God. This is the very argument that Chief Justice William Moore was making in Alabama when he put the Ten Commandments monument in the judicial building in Montgomery, and said that we must, or he said the state of Alabama in his case, must acknowledge God as the source of our law. And he was saying God is on the ceiling, if you will. I apologize for the limitations of my word picture, but because of course God is much more than just the ceiling, but.
Hold that thought right there, Michael.
Sure.
We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, Michael's point is that as you use the analogy of the room, and you stand in the middle of the room, and behind you, of course, is a wall, and that's the wall of self-government, and it has restrictions on it. And then to one side you have the family, the other side you have the church, and in front of you have the civil government. But God has to be over all of this, because if God is not in charge, then you're going to end up with moral anarchy, and there's certainly no way you can trust the civil government to do what's right any more than you can trust anybody else who is independent of God's rules and regulations. Well, before we go on, I do want Michael to get out his website so you will know where you get the wonderful information that is available today from the Institute on the Constitution. Michael, go ahead, get your website out, telephone number, anything you'd like to get.
Sure. Thanks, Dr. Stan. IOTCOnline.com. TheAmericanView.com is our website. You can also go to TheAmericanView.com, TheAmericanView, T-H-E, and TheAmericanView. And you can, on the AmericanView website, we talk about these applications. We discuss the current candidates and their positions, et cetera. But on the Institute on the Constitution, IOTC stands for Institute on the Constitution, IOTConline.com. That's where we talk about and teach these principles that I'm trying to give an example of today, of this word picture of the walls. And see, I've left out, I haven't actually discussed in detail the scripture that authorizes these particular jurisdictions, but interestingly, I mentioned Lord Acton earlier. When in the Gospel of Luke, where Jesus says that they were trying to tempt him to make a mistake. And by the way, the people that were trying to test him and tempt him were lawyers, weren't they? You know how they are. Jesus said, they said, should we pay taxes to Caesar or no? Or should we pay taxes or not? And of course, it was a trick question. Because if he said yes, you should pay taxes, then his stock would go down. If he said no, then he would incur the wrath of Caesar, and they could go call him a traitor. And so what Jesus said was, "Show me the coin. Whose image do you see?" And they said Caesar. So he said, "Render to Caesar, therefore, the things that are Caesar's." So what he was saying is, back to our word picture, Caesar has a wall. There is a wall. There is a civil government wall. There is a proper and appropriate jurisdiction for Caesar. However, then he went on and said, but they're God, the things that are God's, implying that Caesar's jurisdiction is a limited one. And, of course, this understanding of the limited powers and limited responsibility and authority of civil government is ingrained in our biblical and Christian America. And it was part of our founding documents, and some people argue that, well, we were a Christian country back during the time of the Mayflower, but we had lost our Christian identity. But clearly, in my view, at the time of the founding, the formal founding of the country in 1776 and 1787, these Christian principles were in play in the culture, and they reflected themselves in the documents of the founding. So we are, that is our heritage. That is our history. And of course, as you mentioned earlier, Dr. Stan, you don't find that taught in government schools, because the government schools, they're on that wall to your right. And they're only going to teach things that promote an allegiance of them, which is to say that they want you to understand that they want to move their place from that wall on the right. The civil government has always wanted to do this. Every civil ruler has always wanted to do this. They want to be on the ceiling, don't they? They want to move up to the ceiling. They want you to forget that they're just one of the four jurisdictions on one of the four walls, and they want to be worshipped and adored, the civil government. And so the pagan understanding, not the biblical American understanding, but the pagan understanding that we find in play in America today, largely, is that the state is not just on the wall, but that the state is divine. The state is on the ceiling. The state is the ultimate arbiter of all disputes. The civil government represented by the Supreme Court is going to answer moral questions for us. It's going to tell us whether abortion is legal or not legal. This is preposterous. I mean, this is far outside. I know it's accepted today as the mainstream, but it's far outside what you and I understand, and I hope your listeners understand, to be the true historical American and biblical view of law and government.
And of course, our laws were based upon common law, and the common law was based upon the Bible. This is how it was for 100 years after America was created, and that is never taught in law schools today. It is never taught in high schools or junior highs or universities. They do not want the people, and that's why they took God out of our prayer, out of our schools, and prayer out of our schools, and the Ten Commandments out of our schools. They did not want the next generation of young people to understand that God has to be the foundation of our society if we are to be free.
See, when you talk about God, they want to tell you, oh, separation of church and state. And what you have to understand is there is a true understanding of that concept, but it doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean that. It's a separate wall, and as a matter of fact, again, I'm coming back to Lord Acton. Lord Acton said that Christ made it in that statement, render to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's. He said it's the universal job of the perpetual job of the universal church, I should say, and that's the, I think, his quote, the perpetual job of the universal church to keep the civil government on its wall, to keep limiting the civil government. That's why they used to have things like election day sermons, Dr. Stan. That's why preachers and pastors used to get up and say, this candidate represents a biblical view, you can vote for him, this candidate does not. And therefore, we wouldn't recommend that you vote, or you can't vote for this person. And that idea today is almost unthinkable in America, to have a pastor actually stand up and give pastoral biblical advice about how to vote. But yet Lord Acton said and Christ said that this is the job of the church, and supported by the family and the individual, of course, but supported by the other walls. But the church has stopped doing that job. So back to your question. What do? Well, the first thing I think that we ought to do is to get out of any church that's a corporation. Here comes a bold statement, okay? I mean, this will make people stand up and argue against me here, but I would boldly as I could say, if your church is a corporation, then it's already bowed the knee to Caesar. It's already on the wrong wall and under the authority of the wrong wall, and you need to get out of it.
And, of course, that means that basically that the churches take out a 501c3. Somebody tells them, oh, you got to do that. You got to be incorporated, limit your liability. And then, of course, you know, if people give money to your church, why, that money's tax deductible, and you're going to get a lot more money if you aren't, you know, you're not 501c3. People aren't going to contribute to you. And then, of course, you find out once you've done that that the minister cannot speak on anything political in an election cycle. And then you have ministers who have far more fear of government than they have of God. And that's why our country's in the mess we are.
What you have there is that church has made an unrighteous bargain with Caesar. It's rendered to Caesar what is not Caesar's. And it's forgotten to render to God what is God's. And that's easy to do in this day and age, because out of ignorance and out of cowardice, it's easy to do. But any church that has already become a corporation, I would suggest to you, is not a church. It's a civil church or a state church. It's not on its own separate wall where it belongs and exercising the jurisdiction that God has given it. Therefore, it's not what it purports to be. Back before about the 1925s, about around that time, there were virtually no churches in America that were corporations. This is a relatively modern phenomenon for churches to become corporate. And it's sold to churches for various reasons by attorneys who have a lot to answer for.
But, because Michael is an attorney, so go right ahead, Michael.
Well, of course, I think my profession does have a lot to answer for, because it's acted in very sinful and self-aggrandizing and unbiblical ways. It does. But I think that churches have let themselves be hushed and gagged, and they are not doing the job that God ordained them to do, which is to keep, as I said, one of their jobs is to not just the salvation of souls, but they're charged with keeping the civil government on its own wall, within its own jurisdictions. And once it becomes a corporation, it said, oh, I'm sorry, please give us your protection, civil government. Please give us your protection, Caesar. Let us come inside your gates and, you know, so that we can have these privileges from you. And they basically traded their tax immunity for a tax exemption. And there's people that have written books about this that are much more eloquent and descriptive than I am about this. I'm just kind of giving an overview. A man named Peter Kershaw, who's probably the best that I have read on this subject. And Peter Kershaw's I think his website is healourland.com. Heal Our Land, quoting Chronicles, 2 Chronicles 7:14. Healourland.com. And go to his, he's written a couple of books and done some more. He actually goes around the country, Dr. Stan, getting churches to unincorporate. He just goes around trying to get them to turn back into churches again. So his is a ministry that I support and recommend. Back to your question, what do we do? Well, first of all, we need to understand what's happened. We need to get a grip on what's occurred. This is going to be solved by voting for this candidate over that candidate. This problem is a deep one. It goes to what we know and understand about law and liberty, and what we're committed to in our hearts, and following basically the precepts and the principles and the patterns of scripture. That we have to get back to knowing who's boss and following him. And the rest will be blessed, I believe, by having that imbued in the culture.
I agree with you totally, and I really think that this is one of the big problems we have. We don't have people who fear God and are subservient to him. We don't have people who love God and are subservient to him. And until we get God back into everything that is going on today, why we're going to continue down this slope towards ultimate destruction, this downward spiral, death spiral that we're in today. And we either will reverse that process and resume our course of freedom under God, or we will lose America, and America will simply become a remembrance of things past.
Sure. We're way down that road. And on the one sense, I guess you could, you know, if you were faithless, you would say, we're doomed. you could certainly take that attitude, but it's a faithless one. God, I certainly believe, let me say it this way, that God has put you, Dr. Stan, and me, and all of us, everybody that's listening to this program, he's put us all here at this place, and at this time, and the people listening to this program, he's put you right where you are right now, not just at this place, but in this time. He didn't put you here in the 1700s or whatever other time. He put you here now, and he gave you a particular purpose, and he has a particular plan for you, and I never dreamed, Dr. Stan, I never dreamed I'd run for president of the United States. I mean, that's an absurd thing. That's just an absurd thing for me to have ever thought about, that I'd run for president. But, you know, the opportunity came to me, and the situation presented itself to me such that I considered it my duty to do. Now, don't get me wrong. I didn't consider winning the election as a high probability event. But I did believe that whatever would happen would be in the hands of God, and that what was my duty was not necessarily to win the election. God didn't put it on, give me the duty to win, but he did, I think, give me the duty to run. And to run with all my heart. And I endeavored to do that, and I didn't do it perfectly. I wouldn't say that I did, but I did do it with all my heart. And I tried my best to point out that during that election, Mr. Bush, Mr. Kerry, but just like Mr. Obama and Mr. McCain and Hillary or whatever, they have no allegiance to America. Their allegiance is to a new world order. You've written about this and documented this as well as anybody, Dr. Stan. Their allegiance is to international trade treaties, international trade organizations. They are not, they're not Americans in any way that our founding fathers would have defined being an American. And so there's absolutely, it's folly to vote for either of those people. One person, by the way, I've mentioned Dr. Chuck Baldwin, and that I believe he's qualified for the job. A person that I've been listening to a lot of his programs is Ron Paul. And Ron Paul, way back in the old days and in the present days, articulates, I think, this American view. And he certainly articulates an understanding of the Constitution and the limitations it places upon civil government, as well as anyone, I think, in American history has. I think, and he handles himself very well under the mocking of many of the commentators, like what is it, the Colbert Report, or there's John Daly or others who have interviewed him, and I've been on programs like that back when I was running Dr. Stan. That's what I call attack radio or attack TV. They're only having you on so they could marginalize you and mock you and degrade you and denigrate you. But I think Ron Paul has used those foros as well as anybody in getting his message across. He's pretty articulate and he's pretty quick, and I have a lot of respect for him as well.
And I do it too, and we're carrying his book, The Ron Paul Revolution. We think it's an important book. And certainly he articulates the fact that I wish he was running for the presidency, but he's not going to. He's going to stay in the Republican Party. He's going to just try to get people to be concerned about freedom, because we're moving from freedom to fascism as we prepare to go expand the war in the Middle East and kill a lot more people over there in Iran, and then probably we'll be at war with Pakistan, and we'll be at war with Saudi Arabia, and because they're going to be taken over by the radical form of Islam, we'll kill millions of Muslims. And the American people are responsible for what goes on. Men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose.
Amen. I agree with you wholeheartedly. The American people will be held responsible, I think, by God for their willing ignorance of what's going on. And I would say to your listeners, Dr. Stan, anybody that you hear stand up that supports the war, especially with such stupid reasons like, well, we've had so many people killed so far, we can't give up now, which is like, you know, I've stepped into this swamp and I'm up to my hips, so I better get up to my neck.
Hold on, we'll be back in just a moment with Michael Perutka to wrap up today's program. Well, go right ahead there. If you have 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
How much time?
You have 3 minutes.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Stan. And again, I thank you for your hospitality and I thank you for the work that you do. God bless you for your tireless, indefatigable efforts to bring the truth to the American people. I speak for many of us today. We're all very grateful to you.
Well, of course, I feel it's a privilege to do what I do, and I appreciate your help and support.
Well, I would say to folks, listen, anybody who talks about any of these following things, you can't possibly vote for. Anybody who talks about global warming, and you can't vote for. Anybody who champions the environment over property rights, you can't vote for. Anybody who is in favor of the war in Iraq or the war against Syria or any of these foreign wars for empire, you can't vote for. Anybody who tells you that they want health care for everyone, you can't vote for. All these things are unconstitutional, unlawful, un-American. Anybody who says that they want to improve education with using government aid or government funds, you can't vote for. All of these things are violations of the jurisdictions that we've already talked about earlier on this program. Anybody who says that America is a democracy and that we have to either expand democracy or protect democracy, anybody who uses the word democracy in a positive way and says that that's what we are, they fundamentally don't understand American law and government, and you can't vote for them. So I'm smiling with you here because I don't mean to paint such a bleak picture. But anybody who's in any of those camps and speaks of any of those things, write them off. Don't give them another thought. Don't even consider voting for anybody like that. I ask you to look. I haven't actually looked at his website yet, but I ask you to look at Dr. Chuck Baldwin's website. The Constitution Party, I was very disappointed in after my running with them because of their compromise on the abortion question. I thought that was a terrible, terrible mistake. I don't think Dr. Chuck Baldwin has done so, but I worry about the party. I have a great deal of respect for Ron Paul because he understands the constitutional limitations of government. Please don't give anybody else any thought. Please go to IOTCOnline.com, where you can learn about the history and the heritage of American liberty under law. Get yourself educated so that you have the tools to hold elected representatives responsible. Again, Dr. Stan, I don't know how much time I used.
You're out of time. God bless you, Michael. We'll talk to you again next month. Thanks so much for being with us. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, fine. Well, I hope you've enjoyed Michael Perutka. I always enjoy it. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We do hope you enjoyed our interview with Michael Perutka, who's on with us the second Friday of every month, and we always look forward to having him. And to pay attention to what he said, understand our Constitution, go to their website, iotconline.com, get the material, and then, of course, we carry a number of books. We carry the book Betrayed by the Bitch. It's, of course, it's a book written by our friend John Stormer about why the Supreme Court did what they did and how, of course, they've undermined the very moral fabric of our society. But even more apropos would be my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, because we will tell you what nobody else will tell you, and that is not that the Supreme Court took God, prayer, and the Ten Commandments from our schools, but why. Why did they take God and prayer and the Ten Commandments from the schools? Everybody's critical of them, but nobody tells you why they did it. And, of course, Brotherhood of Darkness, the book, the DVD, the video, or, of course, it's simply the tape. They all tell you the same story. You can get them all together for the Brotherhood of Darkness special, or simply get them separately. But get the information, and then, of course, you'll want to, of course, get our talk on the forbidden secret and the syllabus that goes with that. You'll want to get our talk on the planned police state and the syllabus that goes with that. You'll want to get the material we have on concentration camps. Ladies and gentlemen, there really are concentration camps in America. You want to see them? The Bob Wire of America is a very good DVD that will show them to you. And then, of course, you want to get our four tape set on concentration camps. You'll want to get the DVDs we have on amazing clips. You can get them all together in something called the Concentration Camp Special. People have to understand what is really going on, and that nothing is happening by accident. They're in the process of destroying the value of our currency because they're going to destroy the financial system here in the United States. Long-term planning, and of course they have an alternative. After they've destroyed everything you've spent your whole life working for, and of course destroyed our currency, then they're going to come up with a global currency, because you can't have a one world government without a global currency. We have a four-tape set called Financial Armageddon. That's Financial Armageddon. We have my talk on the financial tsunami, and you can get that in DVD or video, but there's a syllabus that goes with that, and will help you to understand derivatives and hedge funds and the part that the massive debt will be playing in the housing crisis and all of these things. It's a talk we gave several years ago, but it's still very apropos today, as the whole financial infrastructure of our society begins to crumble. As you see, the first bubble, which of course is the housing bubble, is beginning to collapse. And then, of course, we find that the massive debt bubble, credit card bubble, and all the people have been borrowing money on their trucks and cars, and that bubble is beginning to collapse, but the last one will be the derivatives, and we're talking about somewhere between $500 and $700 trillion in derivatives. There's not that much money, a tenth of that much money in the whole world. What's going to happen? Why, the whole thing is going to implode, and we're going to see rampant inflation and the destruction of the financial institutions which people are dependent upon for their future, for their pensions, for their security. And in the final analysis, you'll not have any security at all in money, and perhaps that will get the attention of people across America. At least that's our hope. Certainly, if you want more information, the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, which we carry, the book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton, which we carry, Professor Sutton's book, Gold for Survival or Gold for Investment, and lastly, the little book written over 100 years ago by Andrew Dickinson White, who was the president of Cornell University. The book is called Fiat Money, Inflation in France. You need to understand what happened in France after the French Revolution in 1789, because if you read that book, it's like deja vu all over again. And you'll understand what's really going on in America today. And, of course, we have a little pamphlet called The History of Money, another, The Financial Meltdown. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are under attack today.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.